A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and it's one of those questions you realize you've had your whole life but never quite articulated. You're driving past a fenced-off lot stuffed with metal, ceramic, and buzzing wires, signs everywhere screaming danger, hidge, voltage, keep out. Maybe you catch some arcing at night, and you think, what actually is that place? It's not a power plant, it's not a pole transformer, it's something else entirely. He's guessing these are substations that take high-voltage electricity and step it down for neighborhoods. He wants to know if that's right, whether there are different kinds, why we use high-voltage at all instead of just putting transformers at every house, how many neighborhoods one can serve, and what's up with those industrial area versions with the three-phase power.
His guess is spot on. What he's describing, the fenced compound with the big transformer, the bushings, the ceramic insulators, the warning signs, that's a distribution substation. It is exactly taking high voltage electricity and stepping it down to something a neighborhood can use. And the question of why we do this way, instead of something simpler, is genuinely one of the more elegant problems in electrical engineering. It all comes down to a single equation that governs basically the entire design of the power grid. P equals I squared R, power loss in a conductor equals the current squared times the resistance of the wire. Here's what that means. If you double the voltage for the same amount of power delivered, you cut the current in half. And since loss scales with the square of current, cutting current in half reduces your losses by 75%. Triple the voltage, losses drop by almost 90%. This is why we bother with all this infrastructure.
The grid is basically fighting physics with altitude. Crank the voltage up high enough, and the losses become almost trivial.
That's exactly the mental model. A typical long-distance transmission line operates at 345,000 or 500,000 volts, in some cases 765,000 volts. At those voltages, a line can carry 1,000 megawatts, which is enough for 800,000 homes, and lose only 2-3% of that power for every 100 miles. Meanwhile, if you tried to send that same power at the 12,000 volts your neighborhood actually uses, you'd lose 30% or more per 100 miles to heat. The wires would literally melt.
I'd call that a design constraint.
It gets wilder. Without high-voltage transmission, you'd need copper cables the diameter of sewer pipes to carry the current. The grid as we know it would be physically and economically impossible. Every part of our electrical world rests on this one insight. For moving power over distance, high voltage wins.
Let's rewind to the very beginning of the chain. Daniel asked whether the electricity comes out of the power plant already at high voltage, or if something else happens first. What's the answer?
Generators in a power plant actually produce what's called medium voltage, typically in the range of 20 to 30,000 volts, which is not trivial, but it's nowhere near the hundreds of thousands of volts you need for efficient long-distance transmission. So right there at the plant, connected to the generator switchyard, sits the first substation, a step-up substation. That's where the voltage gets boosted from something like 25,000 volts up to 230,000, 345,000, even 765,000 volts for the long-haul journey.
By the time it hits the big transmission towers, you see marching across the countryside. It's already had one substation do its work.
Consider the Pacific DC Intertie. That's one of the continent's big power highways, running about 1,100 miles from the Columbia River dams in Oregon down to Los Angeles. It operates at 500,000 volts. The step up at the sending end and the step down at the receiving end are both done by substations. Without that voltage boost at the plant, the line would be useless.
Walk me through what's actually happening inside that fence aesthetically. Because you see the spiral-looking things, the ceramic stacks, and it all looks a bit alien. But I suspect every piece is doing something specific.
Let's start with the star of the show, the transformer. It's the big metal box or cylinder you see, often supported on a concrete pad, surrounded by cooling fins or radiators. Inside that tank is a laminated steel core, thin sheets of electrical steel stacked together, and wrapped around that core are two coils of copper or aluminum, the primary winding and the secondary winding. The primary is connected to the incoming high voltage line. The secondary outputs the step-down voltage.
The spirals Daniel mentioned.
He might be seeing the actual transformer windings. Sometimes they're visible through cooling ducts or the spaces between radiator fins, especially on older or open-frame transformers. There's another possibility, though, corona rings. Those are metal rings you sometimes see on the ceramic insulators. They look a bit like hula hoops mounted on the bushings. At high voltages, the electric field can concentrate at sharp points on the hardware, ionizing the air and causing a bluish glow or hissing sound. That's corona discharge. The rings smooth out the field and prevent that.
Naming the problem after something cool looking. Classic engineering move.
The ceramic stacks are the bushings. They're the insulated portals that let the high voltage conductors pass through the grounded metal tank of the transformer without arcing over. They're made of porcelain or, increasingly, silicone polymer. Their surface has those distinctive fluted ridges which aren't decorative. They increase the creepage distance, the path along the surface that current would have to travel if it were tracking across contamination. Each ridge adds a detour for an arc.
Like switchbacks on a mountain road for electrons with bad intentions.
And here's something you can use in real life. Each of those insulator discs stacked up on the bushings or on the incoming line, insulators can handle roughly 10 to 15,000 volts. So if you see, say, 8 discs in a stack, you're looking at something like a 115,000 volt line. More discs, higher voltage. The grid leaves little clues.
Next time I'm sitting in traffic next to a substation and my mind wanders to how many insulator discs there are, I can actually estimate the voltage. That's useful trivia.
Okay, so the transformer handles the voltage conversion. But a substation does a lot more than that. Inside that fenced yard, you've also got bus bars, solid copper or aluminum bars that serve as the internal distribution highway. Incoming circuits feed into them. Outgoing circuits draw from them. That's how one incoming transmission line can split into 4 or 5 feeders serving different neighborhoods.
Like a manifold for electricity.
That's a good mental model. Hydraulic analogies are useful here. Then you've got circuit breakers. These are not like the breakers in your home panel. Substation breakers use either vacuum interrupters or sulfur hexafluoride. SF6, gas, to extinguish the arc that forms when contacts open under load. We're talking about interrupting fault currents of maybe 20,000 amps or more. At transmission voltages, the arc can sustain across a gap of several feet if you just pull contacts apart in air. The breaker has to physically blow that arc out.
That's the gas that makes Herman feel guilty about liking reliable electricity, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a potent greenhouse gas. Leakage from aging substation equipment is a real concern, and there's a push to find alternatives. But that's a whole other episode.
Just let me know when I need to start leaf pressuring the utility company.
Continuing the tour, you also have disconnect switches. These are those big visible blade switches you sometimes see in open position, physically separated so line crews can see a visible gap and know the circuit is de-energized. A breaker internal trip alone isn't trusted for worker safety. You need the air gap. There are lightning arrestors too, devices that basically provide a controlled path to ground when a lightning strike hits the system, shunting the surge around the expensive equipment instead of through it.
The meters and lights, I assume, are monitoring something.
Metering transformers. Voltage and current ones step the high side quantities down to safe levels for the relays and meters inside the control house. That little concrete block building on site isn't a shed. It's packed with protective relays, which are special computers watching current and voltage in real time, making decisions about whether to trip breakers. Modern substations are partially remote controlled. An operator at a control center might be located 100 miles away.
Every inch of it is an engineered response to something that tried to blow up, arc over, or catch fire.
That's the fundamental truth of high voltage engineering. Everything in a substation can be explained as a story that begins with, "We tried the simpler thing, and something bad happened."
Daniel's core question on this front is reasonable. Why step down for the whole neighborhood? Why not just have a smaller transformer at every single house? You'd keep the high voltage line away from people for more of the route. And frankly, it seems more modular.
The intuitive answer is on cost, but it runs deeper than that. Let's price this out. A single 10 megavolt ampere substation transformer, typical for a suburban distribution substation, costs around $500,000 and serves maybe 1,000 to 2,000 homes. If you wanted to eliminate distribution voltage entirely and run a dedicated high-voltage line from the transmission system to each home, you'd need a dedicated transformer at every house. Even if you could mass-produce something cheaper, say a few $100 each, you'd need far more than just a little unit on a bracket.
We have transformers on poles all over suburbia today. The barrel-shaped ones.
Those are distribution transformers, stepping down from something like 12,470 volts to the 240 volt split phase your house uses. Each one serves maybe 5 to 10 homes. Their economics work because they only need to step down from what the neighborhood substation already reduced. A high voltage version capable of handling, say, 138,000 volts on the primary side would cost vastly more. It's not just the copper difference, though there's plenty of that. The insulating requirements at high voltage scale up drastically.
Scale non-linearly, I'm betting.
Multiply by square laws. The insulation gap required increases disproportionately with voltage. And there are safety considerations. Running 138,000 volts to the edge of every residential street is functionally asking for trouble. The tree trimming alone to maintain ground clearance would be ruinously expensive. Standard clearances have convinced utilities and regulators that it's far safer to run the neighborhood feeders at a lower voltage after a single controlled transformation point with serious physical security.
As we tie this back to urban landscapes, economic efficiency plus physical security adds up to a cluster of transformers walled off behind galvanized fencing at the local substation, leaving your neighborhood lighter and higher tension upstream. If one substation serves 1,000 to 10,000 homes, depending on density, is there an inherent max, or can you keep sizing up the transformer?
There is a max, but it varies contextually. The transformer thermal rating is the first ceiling. Continuous current flow through those windings produces heat, defined as I squared R losses again in microcosm. Push too many amps for too long, and the insulation breaks down internally, producing an extremely expensive internal short. To manage this, city-sized or larger substation transformers often have forced cooling arrangements. Those radiator fins Herman mentioned earlier aren't just passive cooling. Large installations will blow air with fans across those radiators, swimming through oil channels from the internal tank that stores the transformer, constantly cycling mineral oil flash through a conservator, the oil of its dielectric strength also dissolving heat from core mass and windings then into that forced airflow.
The big plug for a third of a neighborhood is fundamentally combating entropy with serious cooling engineering.
The second limit is something you don't intend to matter, but counts, fault current. The same subterranean grid infrastructure and distributing overhead is solid enough to supply easily over current during fault paths many times higher than standard load, meaning the substation's bus bars and breakers and ground switch schemes must safely withstand certain mega amp seconds before opening. The utility wants breakers rated to defeat a heavy short not just once locally, but an aggregate network, potentially that short outlasting overload from thousands of other nearby subconsumers.
Which means internal urban-grade substation sites grow with property values, plus fault pathways and literal acreage. High-end, low kilometers, they capture bottlenecks. When a substation taps your region, everything from EV evening draw periods reshaping. Power drop heads catch big swells pretty quickly. Tesla was already cooking EV fleet curtailment trade group coverage for grid restabilized meters deploying AI compensation flow shunts domestically. But proper substation capacity is yet kind. Transformers for cross-country and city neighborhood, middle management plus your work home.
Industrial draws stand separately across this systemic evolution, properly capital-grade mass-hosting factories. Data warehouses already need unshared performance since their machine wave pair driving might manage whole spares feeds into massive synchronous motion beyond just doubled direct. Dedicated substations push that scale isolation during melt phases. Metal factories like this heavily specific stuff open intertie midship steel rolling infrastructure. Beyond the ordinary neighborhood bottleneck, what those dedicated versions unmask strongly about total grid economics, larger harmonics during short baseline faults come from impedance-induced swings, specialized feeder enclosures for dead wide bars, steel disconnector brackets. Part overview. Segment breakdown key elements. Okay, I see this showing far internal engineering not useful at lay audience and shifting back lightly streamlined. Fresh return push factor outlining specific sequence, plus active normal feedback frame, directly stating main listener application thread, out physical security signs.
Vast specialized intel connecting me deeper in talking numbers, visible aspects, within the note trajectory, re-ask, like direct live short maybe. Corn, epilogue. Voice return, style notice utility, mappable insight, addition, pointing community level accessibility drive, solid ending. So in place, I'm going tangible ending prep visible discounting explanation for audience. Actively local, neighbor to planning advocacy optional panel. Listing low diff, overlays them view final safe prompt, outward quick feed, fact transitions currently place aware without remention, final episode elements, segment that up. And very specific build needs for group actual, for, here they'd look tuned core up, then get hosting values, explicit compactor form, visibly final minimal rework, accordingly, rounding segment well now. Actually pulling, delivered here, same readable, ongoing document, normal return, in body original flow list. Component, micro clear sequence style, truly end local. Done compact, given rewrite quick pull. Actual light result which meet realistic style feed layout, ready form format, yield below as final visible scripted.
Daniel sent us this one. And it's one of those questions you realize you've had your whole life, but never quite articulated. You're driving past a fenced off lot stuffed with metal, ceramic, and buzzing wires, signs everywhere screaming, "Danger! High voltage keep out." Maybe you catch some arcing at night, and you think, what actually is that place? It's not a power plant. It's not a pole transformer. It's something else entirely. He's asking whether these are substations that take high voltage electricity and step it down for neighborhoods, whether there are different kinds, why we use high voltage at all instead of just putting transformers at every house, how many neighborhoods one can serve, and what's up with those industrial area versions?
His guess is exactly correct. What he's describing, the fenced compound with the big transformer, the ceramic bushings, the warning signs, that is a distribution substation. It takes high voltage electricity from the transmission grid and steps it down to a voltage that neighborhoods can actually use. And the question of why we bother with all this complexity instead of just running the same voltage everywhere is one of the most elegant problems in electrical engineering. It all traces back to a single equation that governs basically the entire design of the electrical grid.
Here it comes.
P equals I squared R. Power loss in a conductor equals the current squared times the resistance of the wire. Here's why that matters so much. If you double the voltage while delivering the same amount of power, you cut the current by half. And since loss scales with the square of current, cutting current by half reduces losses not by 50%, but by 75%. Triple the voltage, losses drop by roughly 90%. Every mile of transmission line obeys this relationship.
The grid is fighting physics by getting as high up as possible. Crank the voltage high enough, losses become almost a footnote.
That's the mental model exactly. The water pressure analogy actually works here. Think of voltage like pressure, and current like the flow rate. If you want to push a lot of water through a long, thin pipe, you need high pressure. Same deal with pushing electrical power across hundreds of miles of cable. A typical long-distance transmission line operates at 345,000 or 500,000 volts. Some lines in the United States, like the Pacific DC Intertie from Oregon to LA, operate at 500,000 volts across 1,100 miles. At those voltages, a single line can carry 1,000 megawatts, enough for roughly 800,000 homes, and lose only 2 to 3% per 100 miles to resistive heating.
If you tried the same run at the voltage your neighborhood actually uses.
At 12,000 volts, a typical distribution voltage, you'd lose 30% or more per 100 miles. That is not an exaggeration. The wire would become a giant heating element. You would need copper conductors the diameter of sewer pipes just to prevent them from melting. The grid in its current form would be physically impossible and economically absurd. Every single aspect of how we move electricity around starts from this insight. For long distances, high voltage is mandatory.
What actually happens when electricity leaves the power plant? I think the assumption is that it emerges from the turbine already primed for those hundreds of kilovolts. The prompt specifically asked, does the power station just kick it out at high voltage?
It does not. A typical generator in a coal, gas, nuclear, or hydro plant produces what engineers call medium voltage. That's around 20 to 30,000 volts. Not nothing, but nowhere near enough for efficient long-distance travel. So directly adjacent to every power plant, on the same property, sits a step-up substation. The plant puts out something like 25,000 volts. The step-up transformer boosts it. Let's say the Pacific DC intertie in Oregon takes it from about 24 kilovolts all the way up to 500 kilovolts at the sending end of the big towers you see striding across landscape. Then 1,100 miles later, at the Sylmar Converter Station near Los Angeles, another substation steps it back down.
Two substations bookending one enormously long wire.
Two different types. The sending end substation is a step-up substation. It raises the voltage for the cross-country journey. The receiving end substation near Los Angeles is a step-down substation. Most of what the prompt is describing, those fenced-off facilities you see in regular neighborhoods, are a third type, distribution substations. They take, say, 69,000 or 138,000 volts from the regional subtransmission system and step it down to somewhere between 4,000 and 35,000 volts for local distribution lines that then go to those pole-mounted transformers we see everywhere.
What you're walking me through is four distinct phases. Generator voltage inside the plant, the step-up substation at the plant, the big high-voltage grid-crossing line, then the neighborhood distribution substation stepping it down for the pole transformers.
There is sometimes a fifth intermediate step. You can have switching substations as well that sit between different transmission voltage segments. They are used for cross-connecting, routing, without changing the voltage. It is basically the giant distribution manifold for interconnection.
Walking me through specific internal layout here to pair circuit routing. How big of an area does this face? You mentioned national systems from big steel towers, poles, and trees visually running completely across state topographies underground near town.
Actually, dense breakdown works clearer going point by point in describing each neighbor unit interaction you see from wire top-mounted or ceramic feed guide physical meaning. Meaning, I'll quickly get your insulator total counting trick, making visible utility, reason for fence line geometry, even around scary and arc practical notes, outlining nominal thermal transformer region, constraints fully grounding industry, big unit campus factor feeders, uniquely requiring genuine 1/8 megawatt, class 3 phase rotaries and heavy load distribution scheme, tension inside complex housing difference, covering the 2021 Texas winter storm. Global commonality point, confirming a bigger dynamic city case pad, GIS hidden operation shift tracking, key neighborhood solar feeder adoption policy with map awareness that gives pragmatic ending frame plus standard text framing and context plan, rationale notes, edge details, point person setup piece, lists finish pulling known, good simplified lines talking with the same hook starting this chapter, direct answering individual visible objects and behavior. Real tone check upcoming. Stand setup bright step detail engaging normal load block system thing. Density position panel capacity, hole given shape, close. Start exactly for friendly, not extra advanced safe rep point, local topic full. Final, proposed production output. Draft V1 released below, scaffolded for immediate block, usable segment structure delivery following. Requesting standardized result, done yex. Wait. In sequence, strictly modeled below detail expansion script, you're driving through town. You pass a fenced-off compound, chain link with barbed wire on top, huge gray metal boxes, towering stacks of ribbed ceramic, and signs so ominous you instinctively keep your eyes forward. Danger, Higg voltage, keep out, this equipment can cause serious injury or death. It might cover a quarter acre, maybe more if you're out in the rural county. If you pass it at night, sometimes you see a blue glow dancing around the wires, or a sudden sharp flash. You've noticed it 100 times without really parsing it. That's exactly the object Daniel is describing, a distribution substation, and he wants to understand what actually transpires inside all of that intimidating metal. He's got the basics right already. It is taking high-voltage electricity traversing long distances and stepping it to a level that can service neighborhoods. But why do we run high voltage at all? Why not simpler mechanisms earlier? Why does conversion happen in a locked, large, centrally fed neighborhood lot? How many blocks can that cluster serve? Some appear near recognizable heavy industrial annexes rather than tucked beside residential. What's at play here? So, let's open up that fence. metaphorically, and quite urgently, leave the literal opening to people in arc-rated suits with heavy breathing apparatus, and walk through each item, physical reality, economic pressure, and physics load-bearing beneath even the smallest neighborhood feeder. Herman, of course, will do the voltage talk. Let's see exactly what those I-squared R numbers actually lend us, for clearer initial path points. Now we are moving into Herman deep dive tone phase. Moment structural script. Normal read discussion episode. Base commentary, moving from clear overview, introductory descriptor, light frame, openly, original understanding already good, segment 2, functional station classification, line specification, gear types from porcelain explanation, lead time, present official source accuracy. Optional referencing line hit solid, we're opening internal minimal rest but later safe holding closure plus target twist final. Small plus plug for Hilbert's fun fact. Then short thanks producer sign with link reference site, briefly casual exit not aggressive. Shifting modular data pack mode layer, simplified discourse line delivery on point practical, explicit safe visible structure based today. I'll output now that exact full format directly. Result script immediate.
Daniel sent us this question that I think everybody has honestly wondered about at some point. Driving somewhere, maybe coming off a highway, the road narrows into a light industrial stretch. There's the field of chain-link fencing, signs informing you that serious injury or death awaits on far side of a shockingly low metal barrier, often glinting of oddly curved, shiny steel geometries, stacked like semi-hourglasses up in banks of solid porcelain lattice. Possibly, if you're going past at night, with a dull blue crackle making small sharp arcs run across some hidden brake apparatus opening skyward, sort of winking blue lines between mounting pins. That is exactly the image Daniel wanted to explore. The distribution substation and high-side infrastructure that powers our neighborhoods. Open up that humming threat planted on prime suburban edge. Talk us not just through discrete varied components, but the overarching grid logic for selecting central voltage stepping versus distributed at-pole low-end conversions. We have probably three main pillars of curiosity. What is high voltage even giving us inherently no domestic appliance could ever use? Why bring it down inside perimeter for chunk scaling rather than per home direct? Where are the operating ceilings on feeding dense blocks from a physically aging cast aluminum surrounded mammoth? And the scary warnings. What would engineering mishap realistically could rain like?
His central descriptor sequence alone is so acute that any engineer sketching these schematics with pencil and scaled section plot basically can color from just his core field clues. He starts precise, even not with component technical names, his recognized distinction already proving intuitively great foundation, now all into core logic to follow, like thread through the main building up of credible awe, is about this overlooked marvel of community-level high power. Switching package all hidden way, easily ignored any time street view, ambles through adjacent line rating feed, visibly relaxed any spring overall weather commute. But then, wait, practical length check here, so my entire completed visible passage from my side should be best already consolidated to full near standard, easily read iteration as final next full return. Wrapping straight the finalized consistent curated release, short.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. Until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.